Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, September 13th, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week and happy Football Sunday. As a lifelong Minnesota Vikings fan, I'm very happy that today is here and we're getting football and we're about 2 hours or so from kickoff at the time of this recording. So if you're a football fan, I'm sure you're happy just like I am that football's back. And, you know, technically back since Thursday, but this is like the real opening day. You know, most of the team's playing today. And if you're not here for football, if you're here for wrestling, that's great as well. Because guess what? I got plenty of wrestling to talk to you about today. I'm going to go through a list of topics for today's episode, and then we'll just jump right into it. So in this edition of the Weekender, we're going to be talking the Ring of Honor Pure Title Tournament. The brackets are out. I'm going to go from the first round all the way through. We got some bracketology for you today. And by the end of it, I will give you my official prediction for the winner of the tournament. So we're going to talk a lot about that today. We have results for Impact Wrestling, results for 205 Live, results for Warrior Wrestling Stadium Series. We have a prediction. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Nick Aldis vs. Mike Bennett NWA World Heavyweight Championship match. That's coming up in just a couple days. Also have some recommendations for y'all and a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled All Out Fallout. So without any further ado, let's just jump into it. Starting, as always, with my recommended show on independentwrestling.tv. And this week, I have chosen Southern Honor Rumblejack 2020. So this show happened in Canton, Georgia, not far from where I'm at. And this happened on August 28th, so just a couple weeks ago. Once again, the company is called Southern Honor Wrestling, and the show is called Rumblejack 2020. These are the matches to expect. We had AC Mack versus Chip Day. The SHW Tag Team Championships on the line, the Lynch Mob taking on Lethal Poison. Also had a Southern Honor Championship match between Corey Hollis and Ashton Starr. And then the main event is a 30-man Rumblejack match, essentially a Royal Rumble. And I'm not going to give that away because I don't want to give away who comes out during that match and what happens because I want you to check the show out. But 30 participants in that main event Royal Rumble, the Rumblejack match. So check this out. This is a really good show. It's a lot of really good talent. As far as the matches outside of the Rumblejack match, some people I want to highlight. AC Mack. He wrestles Chip Day on the show. AC Mack is the current SUP, Southern Underground Pro, Bonestorm champion, as well as the current Action World champion. So he holds basically the two, in my opinion, the two most prestigious titles in between Nashville, Tennessee and Atlanta, Georgia, as far as independent wrestling is concerned. I consider Action to be one of the best indies out there, and I consider SUP to be one of the best indies out there. And AC Mack is the dual title holder for both companies right now, so huge shout out to AC Mack. He's going to be defending that Bonestorm title against Manders coming up at the Collective, so that'll be really interesting. And AC Mack is a dude who, you know, if you've never seen him wrestle, it's funny because he kind of has most of his gimmick for most of what I've seen from him. It's him basically not wrestling people. It's him finding ways out. It's him getting his butt kicked massively and then finding some sort of loophole or way out of the match and coming out victorious. And he has a real knack for winning. And he's a guy that has a great personality. He's very, very different inside and outside of the almost said the octagon, inside and outside of the ring. He's a guy who plays an ultimate heel when he's out there in front of people, but if you go shake his hand or meet him at like an intermission or after a show or something like that, he's one of the nicest guys in the world. So huge shout out to AC Mack. Also want to give a shout out to the Lynch Mob. That is, why am I blanking on their names? Joey Lynch and Matt Lynch. Two guys that I think are super talented. Joey Lynch had done some stuff with 205 Live a couple years back before getting injured. I love both these guys. I love them as a tag team, like them both as singles competitors as well. I'm familiar with them mainly from the Chattanooga area. Joey Lynch has had a lot of success in the Chattanooga area. He was actually the winner of the Scenic City Invitational Tournament a couple years back. And he's done stuff with SUP, and so has his brother Matt. Both guys are great, really nice guys as well. And two guys that I'm always pulling for, because they definitely both have the talent to be at like the next level. And I've seen Matt Lynch wrestle some stuff for WWE as well. I can't remember what he did, if it was like a 205 Live thing or if he was like an enhancement talent on like SmackDown or something like that. But both guys are ultra talented and both guys deserve, you know, a big break in my opinion. It's just a matter of staying healthy and being at the right place at the right time. But I'm a really big fan of both of those guys, especially, I like them both, but especially Joey. Joey just stands out a little bit more, and he's really known for his moonsault. He's known as the king of the moonsault, got a beautiful moonsault. So huge shout out to those guys. And also want to give a shout out to Corey Hollis. This dude's been around what I feel like forever. I mean, he's just out there grinding. He pops up in Ring of Honor occasionally. He's all over the indie scene, especially in the Southeast. Did really great work with Dojo Pro, which you can find on Amazon and probably other outlets at this point. I've seen him at SUP, a whole bunch of different places, Corey Hollis. And another shout out to him, because he's just one of those guys, like, he's just kind of the definition of a grinder, in my opinion. He's a dude who, he's like all over the place, and he's consistently solid, and everyone seems to like to wrestle him. And he gets booked, like, all the time, but you just never really hear about him that much. Like, not as much as you would expect to with a guy who works as often as he does and has been has shared the ring with so many people, like, so many superstars over the years. So, you know, huge shout-out to Corey Hollis, because he's a guy who just doesn't get the recognition he deserves. But once again, check this show out, and especially that 30-man Rumblejack match. I'm just veering away from talking about that because I don't want to ruin, like, the entrant order or who wins or who's a part of it or anything like that. I want you to check the show out, enjoy it, spoiler-free. And once again, that's Southern Honor Wrestling's Rumblejack 2020. And it's available right now on independentwrestling.tv. Moving on, I have a recommended match for you on YouTube. I have chosen a Ring of Honor match for y'all because I'll be talking about the Pure Title Tournament here in just a second. And I've chosen a Pure Title match from 2005. It is Jay Lethal, who is a part of this upcoming tournament, taking on Spanky, who is also known as Brian Kendrick, who I'll be talking about a little bit later with our 205 Live results. And this was back at Stalemate 2005 for the ROH Pure Championship. So, for many reasons, I've chosen this match. And actually, the Ring of Honor YouTube channel has quite a few old-school Pure Championship matches available. So, check out this one and check out the others. They're totally free on the Ring of Honor YouTube channel right now. And like I said, I picked Jay Lethal because he's a part of this Pure title tournament coming up. He's arguably the best. Like, on paper, Jay Lethal is arguably the best competitor Ring of Honor has ever had. When you look at his TV title run, his Pure title run, his Ring of Honor, you know, World Heavyweight title run, the stuff he's done in tag teams, the longevity, how long he held a lot of these belts, how long he's been a part of the company, how he's always stayed at kind of like the upper to main event level at all times with Ring of Honor. And obviously, I'm going to be talking about him a lot here in just a second with this upcoming Pure Title Tournament. Then Spanky, who was one of the guys who really got me into independent wrestling when I got into it back in the early 2000s. There were guys like him, Paul London. There's a lot of guys I can mention. Jack Evans, who's, you know, currently with AEW. He was another one. Teddy Hart. They came from the same spot, you know, the Dungeon. There's guys like Trent Acid, you know, rest in peace. Guys like that. Amazing Red. But Spanky was like in that group of guys for me, and he's had a really up and down kind of seesaw roller coaster of a career, especially when it comes to like mainstream wrestling. Because even when he wasn't in the WWE, he'd like pop up in TNA and Ring of Honor and stuff like that. But obviously, he's been a part of WWE for the last few years, you know, after making his return to the WWE. And it's fun to just go back in time and watch this. This is just, you know, 15 years ago already, which is just insane, and a really good match. And for those of you who may not be familiar with Spanky, Brian Kendrick, like, maybe you know him more from, like, his more recent work, you should go check this out, because this was a time when he had so much potential. Like, he's still so good, but, like, he had so much potential. His height obviously hindered that, and maybe some of his life choices, because, I know he probably did a lot of stuff back in the day. Like, I remember specifically a shoot interview that him and Paul London did after they left the WWE, you know, years and years ago. And there was a lot of talk of, like, drinking and drugs and, like, partying and kind of being nuts and maybe being a little bit irresponsible and stuff like that. But you can tell by Kendrick's demeanor and attitude and stuff today in, like, 2020, he's, like, a completely different human being. At least it comes across that way. But back in 2005, Spanky was just a young kid trying to make it in the wrestling industry and creating a lot of buzz for himself on the indies. And I think this match is just really cool to go back in time, and especially knowing where both guys are now and checking this match out. So once again, this is totally free. You can check it out on the Ring of Honor YouTube channel. It is Jay Lethal versus Spanky for the Pure Championship from Stalemate 2005. All right, so let's have some fun now and let's talk Ring of Honor Pure Title Tournament. So I'm going to pull up the brackets right now. I had them in front of me and I just lost them because I hit the wrong button for a second. Here we go. Got them pulled up. So I'm going to just go through the blocks here. We have a block A and a block B. And I'm going to go through round by round, eventually deciding who the champion is going to be, who's going to be crowned the new Pure Championship holder. Now, I know that this tournament has technically started. I have avoided all spoilers possible because I wanted to come in here and do a legitimate bracketology with no bias, without knowing anything about what's going on, what's gone on, the last couple of days and stuff. I think yesterday was when they started really having these matches again. And they're doing them in front of no crowd and like a sound studio type thing. So, week by week, what we're going to start doing after this week is I'll take you through the tournament. It's an 8-week tournament and it's stacked. I am super excited for this and there's just so much talent. Starting with Block A, first match we have is Jay Lethal taking on Dalton Castle. I'm going to take Jay Lethal. I think it's a pretty obvious choice here, especially in a tournament that's based around like pure wrestling. Jay Lethal, I don't know. I can't remember exactly how they did these brackets because like they announced them all on YouTube, and I'm assuming that they were done by seeds because just by looking at how it's set up, you can kind of tell the higher ranked guys are split apart from each other. So, for instance, like Jay Lethal and Jonathan Gresham are on opposite sides of the bracket, and I would consider Jay Lethal to be the number one ranked and Jonathan Gresham to be the number two ranked. That's just me personally, and I think that's also how Ring of Honor did it. I just can't remember. There's been so much wrestling over the past couple weeks that I've watched in so many different YouTube shows and different stuff that I can't remember exactly how they did the rankings for this. But it's one of those things where when you look at it on paper, when you look at these brackets, you can kind of tell like they were trying to keep certain people away from each other, at least initially. And I think that's really smart. So starting off with Lethal and Castle, basically the reason I brought all that up just now is I consider Jay Lethal to be the number one ranked person in this whole tournament. I do not see him losing to Castle in the first round. Admittedly, I've never been a huge Dalton Castle fan. His gimmick doesn't really do it for me. His in-ring work doesn't really do it for me. Just not really that entertained by the guy. I know he has a lot of fans. I'm not gonna like knock anybody who's a fan of his or anything like that. He's just never really been for me, and I think it's a really easy, obvious choice that Jay Lethal advances here. After that, we got Finley versus Romero. I gotta go with Finley. I feel like Dave Finley can really use it a lot more than Rocky Romero can. Romero is at a point right now where he kind of is better served to just like put over new people, and Romero has obviously like a lot of ties to Ring of Honor and New Japan and the indie scene and the mainstream scene. I mean, he's very, very heavily connected in the wrestling industry, and I think he can use those connections to help build the next generation of stars. And I think that's a case of this happening right here. I think Dave Finley gets the win over Romero and advances to take on Jay Lethal in the quarterfinals. Moving on, we have Silas Young versus Fred Yehi. I'm going to call big upset here. I'm going to say Fred Yehi defeats Silas Young. And I think Yehi is a guy who's going to turn a lot of heads in this tournament. A lot of people probably aren't going to be familiar with him coming into this. I've seen a lot of his work, mainly in the Southeast. Well, actually, kind of all over the place, but like I've seen him live in the Southeast, I should say. I've seen him in Chattanooga live and Action Wrestling, I believe, as well in Atlanta. And he's just a fantastic technical wrestler. I'm a huge fan of Fred Yehi, and I was really, really excited when I found out that he was going to be a part of this tournament. And that's part of what's so awesome about this is like Yehi is unsigned, at least as of this recording or as of like when this tournament was put together. There's a few guys on this that aren't signed to Ring of Honor, and this is basically like a it seems to me like a really big tryout opportunity. And even if they don't get signed coming off of this, it's going to open a lot of eyes and probably get them signed elsewhere. And Freddie Ehi, I think, could benefit humongously from being a part of this tournament, especially because the rule set gears so much to a guy like him. Whereas Silas Young, a bit more of a brawler, a guy who has a great moveset and a great character. I'm a very big fan of Silas Young, but within the context of what this tournament is, I think Fred Yehi uses his ring savvy and kind of his technical prowess and gets a upset victory over Silas Young. So I'm going to say Yehi advances over Young. Then we got Williams versus Taylor. I'm going to take Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. He's just tailor-made for a tournament like this, and there's a lot of really interesting matchup potential for him here. And Hot Sauce is a guy who, he did such great work with the Powerbomb.tv title before it became the IndependentWrestling.tv title. I talk about him all the time when talking about that belt, because Jonathan Gresham held that belt, and then Hot Sauce held that belt, and then since then we had seen, like, Orange Cassidy, Chris Statlander, Eric Stevens held it briefly. Warhorse has held it for a long time since, which has been awesome. Warhorse's title reign has been just fantastic. But Hot Sauce Tracy Williams is the first person that I saw with that belt and really felt like I was watching a Ric Flair style like territorial champion, like a traveling territorial champion. And Tracy Williams did such great stuff with that title belt, and it's just something where he could, I feel like he's been a little underutilized in Ring of Honor. Like, he's a part of Lifeblood, and he's been featured on the show, which, I mean, I'm definitely happy about that, but I feel like he could really break out, especially when you have something like this pure title coming back. It's just one of those things where, like, this is another one that's, like, tailor-made for someone like him. And Russ Taylor, similar to Fred Yehi, not signed currently to Ring of Honor, but this is going to be a big test for him. If Russ Taylor can go in there and hang with Tracy Williams and have a good competitive back-and-forth match where Williams, you know, gets the win at the end, I think everyone's going to wind up looking good and be better off from it. But I am going to take Hot Sauce Tracy Williams to advance to the quarterfinals to take on Fred Yehi. So we go over to Block B first round. Got Jonathan Gresham versus Wheeler Yuta. I'm going to take Jonathan Gresham to win here. I think it's another one of those obvious ones where, like, Gresham, I think, is, you know, the second-ranked guy underneath Jay Lethal. And Wheeler Yuta is very solid. He's another one of those guys. He's independent. He is not currently signed to Ring of Honor. I've seen him live at Dojo Pro. I've seen him live at SUP. I've seen him live quite a few different places. And he's a guy who's just, he's just solid. I mean, there's really no other way of putting it. He's just solid. You will always get a good match from the guy. He doesn't mess up. He's not, like, super flashy, but he's just consistently solid. That's really the best way I could put it. There's something about him that I feel like is still missing a little bit. There's, like, a little, I don't know, I can't put my finger on it. It's like he checks every box but, like, one. And I don't know exactly what that box is. I don't know if it's, like, the charisma or if it's that, like, the quote-unquote, like, it factor or whatever you want to call it, but there's something just barely missing with Wheeler Yuta from the work that I have seen up to this point. I've seen a lot of his work, to be fair, and I think that something like this, being a part of this kind of tournament, is going to put a different level of confidence in him and help get him that box checked, whatever that is. I think he goes in there against Jonathan Gresham, has an incredible match, real breakout performance, as far as, like, there's going to be a lot of people who've never seen Yuta before that are seeing him for the first time during this tournament. I think Gresham still gets the win, but I think Wheeler Yuta looks really good in defeat. But that said, Jonathan Gresham advances to the next round. After that, we got Delirious taking on Matt Sydal. I'm going to say Matt Sydal gets the win here. Delirious doesn't need it. It's cool to see him as a part of the tournament, but Delirious really doesn't need this win. I would say the same about Sydal, because, like, obviously he's, like, an independent wrestling legend and had a, you know, great run with WWE. Well, great run depending on how you look at it. He had a lot of really cool moments in WWE, but could have done a lot more. That was a whole thing. He had to, like, sit out for years and years, and that was a whole thing. But, you know, I also think Sydal kind of needs it right now because of what happened at AEW All Out. For those of you who may have missed it, he debuted in AEW and immediately botched his shooting star press, and it was brutal. Like, I'm glad he's okay and he didn't get hurt off of that, but that was brutal, and that's going to be a hard one to get. Like for me, it's fine. I can forget it because I've been watching Matt Sydal for like the better part of 2 decades or whatever. But there is probably a lot of people who had never seen Matt Sydal before. I watched All Out with a few buddies, and one of them had never seen him before, and that was their first impression of Matt Sydal, and that's going to be a hard taste to get out of their mouth. So it's just one of those things. It's just unfortunate, unlucky of all the times in your entire career to botch that, for it to happen then. Just awful timing. But that all being said, I see this as kind of a redemption for him. I think he gets past Delirious, makes it to the to the quarterfinals to take on Jonathan Gresham in the next round. After that, we have Josh Woods taking on Kenny King. I think this will be a solid match. I think Woods is going to look really good here, but I do think Kenny King is going to advance. Kenny King is just one of these guys who, for whatever reason, has just kind of been in the same spot with Ring of Honor seemingly forever. Like, I remember him from Tough Enough. I think it was Tough Enough 2 when he was a part of the show. It was either Tough Enough 1 or Tough Enough 2. I can't even remember now. It was one of the first 2 seasons. But he's been around forever, and he's never really been elevated past the spot that he's currently in. Like, he's had good tag teams, like the All Night Express and stuff with Rhett Titus. Like, he's done good stuff. But I kind of the problem is, I really don't know how to put this. I don't think Kenny King will ever advance past where he is at. It's like he deserves it, but at the same time, I just don't see the Ring of Honor ever really going all the way with him. So it just kind of is what it is. He's consistently putting on entertaining matches, whether it's in tag team wrestling or singles wrestling, and I think he could play a pretty interesting role in this tournament. So I am going to take Kenny King to win over Woods, but this was a really hard one for me to choose, but I am going to go with Kenny King. After that, we have Tony Deppen taking on PJ Black. So this is another one where I'm going to basically call upset here. I think this is a really great opportunity for Tony Deppen, who is independent, similar to Taylor, Yehi, and Yuta. Tony Deppen is going to be coming into this with, I mean, there's a lot of people who are probably going to know him from GCW and his indie work, but there's also going to be a lot of people who don't know him from that, who don't know him at all. And Tony Deppen has a real opportunity to make a name for himself here. He's a guy who has great facial expressions when he wrestles. His selling is incredible. His offense is great. He's a really, really entertaining guy, and this is a huge opportunity for him. And I think he gets the big upset here over PJ Black, similar to Fred Yehi. I think that he could really, really use this. He could really use this one over PJ Black. PJ Black's in a situation where I don't think he's ever going to be pushed as the Ring of Honor World Champion. I think he's kind of in the spot he's always going to kind of be in with the company. He's done some decent stuff there, but I just don't ever see him being the guy. And Tony Deppen, you have an opportunity here to kind of create a new star. Whether he winds up signing with Ring of Honor or not, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because he will. Tony Deppen's one of those guys who's on the brink of getting signed somewhere anyways. So whether he lands in Ring of Honor after this tournament or he winds up in like Impact or NXT or AEW or something, like, I feel like it isn't going to be long before we see a lot more of Tony Deppen on mainstream television. But this tournament, I think that is kind of step one towards that. Like, I really think that Tony Deppen could really, really, really use a win over PJ Black here. So I'm going to say Deppen advances to take on Kenny King in the quarterfinals. So moving back over to Block A, we now have Jay Lethal taking on Dave Finley. I think Jay Lethal advances and makes it to the semifinals. I see him defeating Finley after a hard-fought battle. A battle that I think will make Finley look very good in defeat, but I do see Jay Lethal advancing to the semis. After that brings us to Fred Yehi taking on Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. I think if this match winds up happening, it could possibly be the best match of the entire tournament. I know that's saying a lot considering the talent that's in this tournament, but I really believe if they have kind of the vision of the forward-thinking vision that I do about the way these brackets are laid out, if you give me Hot Sauce Tracy Williams versus Freddie Ahai, I will be super happy. And those guys, that's the real way that those two guys could really, really get themselves over to a new level in front of just the wrestling world. These guys could have an incredible classic against each other, and I would love to see it. It's really hard to pick a winner between the two, but I'm going to say that this is going to be a real showcase for certain guys. I'm going to say that this tournament's going to be a tool to use to really try some new things out and get a feel for maybe some future stars of your company, some fresh faces. And I'm going to say that Freddie Ahai winds up upsetting Hot Sauce Tracy Williams in this one as well to move on to the semis. So once again, if this match happens, I think it could be the best match of the entire tournament. But I am going to say Freddie Ahai, kind of a storybook type thing over in Block A, and makes it two rounds, gets to the semis and takes on Jay Lethal. So I'm going to say Ahai over Hot Sauce. Over on Block B on the in the quarterfinals, we have Jonathan Gresham taking on Matt Sydal. Similar to Jay Lethal over on Block A, I think Jonathan Gresham gets past Matt Sydal here, makes it to the semifinals, and I think that can be really good. A real contrast in styles between Sydal's high-flying assault and Jonathan Gresham's more mat-based technical wrestling. But Gresham can mix it up and do, you know, a little bit of everything. I think Gresham's fantastic. I've talked about him at length all the time on this show. But I think that Gresham versus Sydal could be really, really special. Could be a great match, and I'm going to take Jonathan Gresham to get the win there. On the bottom of Block A, we've got Kenny King taking on Tony Deppen. Similar to the story in Block A with Fred Yehi, I say that Tony Deppen gets the upset over Kenny King here. So this is, I just can't stress it enough, this is an opportunity to take, specifically of the field of these guys, like, take Tony Deppen and get him to the semis. Take Freddie Ahai, get into the semis, and in that story, they're in this run throughout the tournament, they're the two big underdog stories here that keep getting these big wins and advancing and really building up their name. I think Deppen versus Kenny King could be very entertaining, and I think it would do a world of help for Tony Deppen to get these kind of wins in this tournament. For his, you know, stock going forward, you know, as really a future star. So I'm going to say Tony Deppen makes it to the semis. So over on Block A in the semifinals, I've got Jay Lethal taking on Fred Yehi. This is where the fairy tale ends for Fred Yehi. Jay Lethal gets through Yehi in what could be just an awesome match. This match could be so awesome if they wind up doing this. But I do think Lethal advances to the finals. And over on Block B, same story on both sides. We got Jonathan Gresham defeating Tony Deppen, ending his fairy tale. But a big story coming out of this tournament would be how close Yehi and Deppen both got, and they're basically made men in Ring of Honor going forward. So this brings us to Jonathan Gresham versus Jay Lethal for the championship in the finals. And I say John Gresham wins that title. So we got Jonathan Gresham leaving as the new pure champion. They have the built-in story between Gresham and Lethal, you know, being a tag team and kind of being frenemies almost, where like you know that they're going to have some big one-on-one matches against each other with a lot on the line. And I think that this would be just a great conclusion to this tournament. Two incredible pure wrestlers, a former pure champion in Jay Lethal, a former, you know, everything champion in Ring of Honor, Jay Lethal, and then Jonathan Gresham, the guy who I've been talking about for years at this point, saying, like, he should be the face of Ring of Honor. He should have already been the world champion at Ring of Honor at this point, at least one time, if not multiple times. They need to push Jonathan Gresham as a singles wrestler. He's incredibly valuable to the company, and he's really the future. Like, if you can keep him locked down, I don't know, you know, what his contract status looks like, but if you have an opportunity to have Jonathan Gresham on your roster long-term, you need to push him as one of, if not the top stars of your company. And I think the Pure Championship fits him like a glove. I think that he deserves to win this tournament. And him versus Jay Lethal, the story is there. The match would be incredible. And that's what I'm going with. I'm going to say that Jonathan Gresham becomes the new Ring of Honor Pure Champion when this tournament is all said and done. So that's that for Ring of Honor. Moving on to Impact Wrestling this week. Got some results for you. Started out with TJP defeating Chris Bay. Finish came with TJP hitting a sunset flip for the 1-2-3. It's concerning a little bit, right, with that. So, like, I like TJP, but, man, Chris Bay, he beat Willie Mack for the X Division title and then retained that X Division title and then lost, although he didn't get pinned, lost the belt to Rohit Raju. And then the next thing you know, Chris Bay's just kind of, like, losing all over the place. And I feel like Chris Bay is one of the most talented people they have on the entire roster. Like, I really don't understand this. I think he should be getting pushed to the moon, whether as the X Division champion or in, like, the heavyweight title mix. I don't know what's going on with Chris Bay right now. But TJP gets the win. I don't hate TJP winning, but it's just one of those things where, like, I do hate Chris Bay losing right now. Speaking of Willie Mack, his next match, he took on Brian Myers. Brian Myers wound up getting the win after kicking Willie Mack low, so, you know, dick kick, and then a DDT, like an impaler DDT, like the Edge style, where you lift him off the ground. Good stuff from Brian Myers, the most professional wrestler. I'm a big fan of his through his podcast with Broski. I'm a figure collector myself and stuff, so I'm really pulling for Myers, and I like that he's getting the singles push in Impact Wrestling. I do not like that it's at the expense of Willie Mack, because similar to Chris Bay, I don't know how Willie Mack has gotten into this position, where he's just, I love Brian Myers getting these wins, but I think he should be getting them over people that aren't Willie Mack. I really don't know how else to say it. Like, Willie Mack was a great X Division champion. He's been great at everything he's done for Impact. He could be in the world title mix. His buddy Rich Swann is in the title mix, which I'll be talking about in just a second. And maybe there's the story there where, like, maybe he gets to that point, but he just has to kind of be in the background for a minute while his other things kind of around him kind of settle themselves. And some of these other feuds get played out before he gets kind of put back in that mix. So, once again, great for Brian Myers. Really sucks for Willie Mack here. Excuse me. Let me grab a swig for the working man real quick. I'm having a hard time keeping my throat cleared up. Moving on, we have the Motor City Machine Guns defeating the Rascals to retain the Impact Tag Team Championships. Finish the match with that double team move. Really, really good stuff. I mean, everybody involved in this match, Dez and Wentz are just so talented, still so young. I mean, the Motor City Machine Guns, great champions. There's so much good stuff going on in the tag team division with Impact Wrestling right now. And after the match, the North come out and attack Motor City Machine Guns. Obviously, the North were the former champions. Motor City's beaten them twice now. Beat them for the belts and then retained over them just a couple days later, or in the next week, or whatever it was. So that was cool to see the North come out and continue that. And Motor City Machine Guns are fighting them off, and Madman Fulton and Ace Austin come out, Good Brothers come out. So basically, like, all these teams are fighting each other, which is great. I'm still not a huge fan of Madman Fulton and Ace Austin being a tag team. I think Ace Austin should be used as a singles wrestler, as a main event level guy. I'll probably say this every episode for the next year, but he should have won the main event at Slammiversary for the title. I love where we're at now with Eric Young as the champion, but I feel like we could have kind of avoided all the Eddie Edwards stuff and still gotten to this conclusion at some point in the near future anyways with Eric Young. But that all to be said, at least he's involved in something that matters. The tag team titles are prestigious in Impact Wrestling. They really are. I mean, the North held that title, or those titles, I should say, for over a year. Motor City is one of the best tag teams in the world, and they have a lot of really good tag teams vying for those belts right now. And the Good Brothers obviously have a lot of buzz about them. They're in that mix. The Rascals, whether it's as tag team wrestlers or singles wrestlers, if you're also including Trey in there, I mean, they just have so much talent. I really like this. I love where the tag team division's at, and I love that all these teams are involved. Moving on, we have Taya Valkyrie defeating Tasha Steelz. Got the win with the Road to Valhalla, her finishing move. Not a whole lot to talk about there. We then have some stuff where, like, Moose is looking for EC3. And, you know, we get some stuff with, like, Rhino talking to Heath. Heath Miller. I don't know if he's going by Heath Miller or just Heath. I think it's just Heath. Obviously not Heath Slater anymore. And in the main event, we have Eric Young defeating Tommy Dreamer to retain the Impact World Championship. This was in an old school rules match. And basically, similar to when he won the title, Eric Young uses his hockey mask and then hits a pile driver, which I really like. I love that they're incorporating this hockey mask with Eric Young, because for one, he's a huge fan of hockey. And two, it looks brutal. Like, the way he's just smacking people with that mask, it sounds great, it looks great. And then he's following it up with that pile driver, which, I mean, he's got one of the best, if not the best pile driver, just classic pile drivers in the business. I love Eric Young's pile driver. Looks brutal, and people are selling the hell out of it for him. So another big win here for Eric Young, retaining the title. And then after the match, Rich Swann comes out and saves. So Eric Young is attacking Tommy Dreamer, and Rich Swann comes out and saves Tommy Dreamer. And he's, you know, on one leg. He's still injured because of what Eric Young has done to him, you know, weeks back. And this is great. This is just a great story. Obviously, it's building towards Eric Young defending the title against Rich Swann. And I'm here for it. I don't know when that match is going to happen. Don't know how long that Rich Swann's going to be, like, you know, selling the leg and taking time off. But when he's back and he's healthy and he's ready to go, this match is going to have a lot of steam behind it. And the story's been great. The match is going to be great. They're two really, really, really great professional wrestlers. Inside the ring, they're great characters, great mic work. I love everything about this, and I'm very excited for the eventual one-on-one championship match between Eric Young and Rich Swann. So that's that for Impact Wrestling this week. Moving on, we got some matches for 205 Live, starting off with the Brian Kendrick defeating Ashante the Adonis. So I talked about Brian Kendrick at the top of the show, and obviously this is what he's doing currently. And Ashante the Adonis is Tahuti Miles, you know, who we've been seeing week after week here on 205 Live. He wanted a fresh start and has adopted a new name, Ashante Adonis. And I was even thrown off by this on NXT this past week, because Adonis wrestled Velveteen Dream, and during my post-show review with Alex Pulowski at Fightful, I was talking to him, and he brought that up. He's like, you realize Adonis was Tahuti Miles? And I was like, oh my gosh, it was. It literally didn't even click to me. Like, I watch 205 Live every week, and the guy looked different. His demeanor, his swagger, everything about him was different. And I didn't even put it together until he said that. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're totally right. That was totally Tahuti Miles. And that one little tweak of changing his name and changing his gear and changing the way he looks and his hair and all that stuff, that was it was great. It worked. It totally worked. Now, Kendrick gets the win here over Adonis, gets the tap out with a captain's hook submission hold, but it's promising for Adonis. And even after the match, Kendrick shakes hands with Adonis and tells him he's a star in the making and wants to help Adonis going forward. So I'm interested to see what happens with Adonis, because it looks like he's in for at least some sort of push. After that, we have Ever-Eyes defeating the team of Andrew Lockhart and Eric Lockhart. Finish came when Ever-Eyes hit that double team face breaker that they do for the 1-2-3. And in the main event, we had Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza defeating Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Finish happened when Ever-Eyes came out and attacked Escobar, who was ringside. And that, like, the distraction resulted in Wilde rolling Burch up with a handful of his tights to get the 1-2-3. So we're getting more stuff, more feuding and stuff between Lorcan, Burch. Ever-Rise is in that mix as well, as really the only tag team, real, like, established tag team that's, like, wrestling on a regular basis on 205 Live. Although Wilde and Mendoza have been more as well, so. And so have Lorcan and Burch. So to be fair, even though I guess Ever-Rise is more like kind of just on 205 Live, like rarely a part of NXT, whereas like the other guys are kind of involved heavily in both. But it's good to see Ever-Rise doing something and getting more experience. And I do like all this going on around Legado del Fantasma, because I think Legado del Fantasma presents something much different than what we've been getting for 205 Live for a really long time now. And that is actual characters and actual stories, like multiple stories that are branching off of this one faction. And the leader of that faction holds the Cruiserweight Championship. So I think this is all really good stuff. I know I sound like a broken record. It's a missable show. Like, it's a show where, like, if you're not watching this every week, you're not really missing anything, especially because you get extensions of a lot of this on other programming like NXT. But if you got some free time, I would recommend checking this out, because we're getting solid matches consistently out of 205 Live. And like I said, the Legado del Fantasma stuff has been really, really good. And then, of course, you know, Shane Swerve Strickland is in the mix here somewhere. He's gotten a few different wins over Escobar, and I imagine that isn't over yet. So a lot of good stuff going on with 205 Live. Moving on, I have results for Warrior Wrestling. This was Stadium Series, and it happened on the 12th, so just yesterday. These are the results. We had Daga defeating Isaias Velasquez, Filthy Tom Lawler defeating Kevin Koo, Thunder Rosa defeating Kimberly, Warhorse defeating Joey Janela, Alex Shelley defeating TJP, Alaya Black defeating Dan the Dad, Brian Cage defeats Ben Carter, the Rascals defeat Jordan Oliver, Chris Bay, and Myron Reed, and for the Warrior Wrestling Women's Championship, Kylie Rae defeated Tessa Blanchard to become the new champion. So a lot of talent on this show. Man, got Kevin Koo just killing it out there. Recently signed to MLW. Been a big fan of his for a long time, especially with his roots in Nashville. Tom Lawler, just the man. He's all over the place. Was a great UFC fighter. Doing great stuff on the indies. He's just literally, like I said, he's literally all over the place right now. Thunder Rosa was on this show, the NWA Women's Champion, who, in my opinion, showed up the entire AEW Women's Division with her one appearance so far. I think that she is the best female wrestler who has stepped into a AEW ring up to this point. And I hope that she's doing more with the company. I know she is going to do more. I just don't know how much more. But if I'm AEW, I do whatever I possibly can to have Thunder Rosa as a regular part of my show. We had Warhorse versus Janela. I talk about Warhorse all the time. In my opinion, the best ever independentwrestling.tv champion. He's a guy we've seen on Impact wrestle Cody for the TNT title. Joey Janela, obviously a mainstay in AEW. We see him all the time, whether it be on Dynamite or Dark or the pay-per-views and that kind of stuff. So great matchup there. Alex Shelley and TJP, two legends of independent wrestling. Love it. We had Dan the Dad as a part of this show. He's been doing stuff with Ethan Page, which has been interesting, with Ethan Page essentially saying that he owns the trademark to Dan the Dad. They've been doing a feud with each other in Black Label Pro. A lot of good stuff there. Big shout out to Dan the Dad, a.k.a. the Millennial Danny Adams. Brian Cage versus Ben Carter. This match was just awesome. Like, Brian Cage, we all know about him. He's just a freak of nature, just super athlete with the physique of a god. Ben Carter, somebody that probably a lot of people didn't know about coming into this match, but I have been familiar with his work, especially with the stuff that he'd done in the Southeast. Ben Carter is the future of wrestling. This guy is just insanely talented at a super young age with limited experience. He's only going to get better. He is so damn good. I mean, he reminds me of like Pac and like Jack Evans, and like there's Ben Carter is going to be so insanely good. And he already is insanely good, but like, man, when we're talking about him in like a couple years, we're going to be talking about a guy who's like one of the faces of wrestling. And he recently had a match on AEW Dark as well. So, I mean, there's the future. I'd say he's the future, but the future's like almost now. Like, the future is coming very fast for Ben Carter. So if you're not already familiar with him, become familiar immediately. We also had the Rascals, who I talked about during Impact. I think all three of those guys are fantastic. Chris Bay's awesome. Jordan Oliver's awesome. Myron Reed's awesome. You know, just so much talent in that six-man match. You had Kylie Rae defeating Tessa Blanchard for that belt. Good for Kylie. I hope this is a sign that Tessa is going to sign. That's the English language there for you. Sign with two completely different meanings there in one sentence. What I mean by this is maybe Tessa Blanchard is going to be a part of AEW or NXT or WWE in the near future. I kind of can only hope. Like, regardless of what your personal opinion of Tessa is, I have to. So let me just say this, right? She's like 24 years old. She made some comments that were really, really stupid a few years back. The people she made those comments towards have supposedly forgiven her for that, and she has not shown a sign of that since. Now, you can also look at her stuff where, like, she held up the Impact World Championship and wouldn't, like, record promos for them while she was the champion, and the fact that she was, you know, the male champion, but you know what I mean by that. Like, she was the world champion. She was the first ever female to hold the Impact World Heavyweight Championship, and the whole thing just kind of wound up being a dud because she wound up, no one could have predicted the pandemic and all that, but, like, the whole way that ended just left a really bad taste in my mouth. And I don't know if I should blame Impact or her, if the blame falls on both parties. I really don't know. But it's one of these things where, like, there are some red flags about Tessa for sure. Now, that all being said, I use this analogy all the time, but it's even more appropriate today considering NFL starting back up, right? I'm a lifelong fan of the Minnesota Vikings, as I stated at the beginning of the show. My favorite football player ever is Randy Moss, right? Randy Moss was a terrible teammate. He publicly did interviews where he said, I play when I want to play. He says, you know, straight cash, homie. Like, he's there for the paycheck. He is not easy to get along with. He would trash, you know, nice people's, like, so there was, like, stories about him and, like, catering, like, these, like, nice old people would, like, bring catering for the Vikings, and he would just talk about how terrible the food was, like, right in front of their faces, and all this kind of stuff. Like, not the nicest guy to deal with as a player, probably a terrible teammate, clearly out for himself, yada, 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 right? A lot of red flags, that's the point I'm trying to make, a lot of red flags with Randy Moss. But he was so damn talented on the football field that it washed away everything else on that other side of it. And I'm not saying you go around, like, being a racist asshole. Like, if Tessa shows, you know, more signs of that kind of stuff, you can't do business with her. But if she's made mistakes in the past, and she hasn't, you know, made those mistakes since, and she's still really young, and we gotta give people chances to, you know, make mistakes and then learn from them and become better people, and she's so damn talented that I feel like you have to take a chance on her if you're AEW or you're WWE. She's just too good to not be signed. And I think this is kind of a signal of some of sorts where you see Kylie Rae get the win here. Let's get all the belts off Tessa before she winds up in AEW or WWE. Don't know where it's going to be. I think AEW could use her massively. Like, they could, oh man, if they get Tessa Blanchard and they can lock down Thunder Rosa more regular, and some of the other women that they, like, Sheeta's really good, Riho, when she's able to be there. That's part of the problem with AEW, too, is a lot of their people are abroad, so, like, they can't make it to the States regularly, especially right now and stuff. So Tessa would be just a massive addition to the AEW women's roster. And she works, it's like a double win, because if AEW ever goes the route of doing any type of intergender stuff, because they're obviously a very inclusive company, Tessa's great at intergender wrestling. And intergender wrestling really isn't my thing. It's really not my cup of tea. But Tessa does it really, really well. And there's a lot they can do with her. So I really think that we're going to see Tessa signed to a major company, either AEW or WWE, really soon. And on the flip side, if she winds up signing with WWE, I mean, WWE's women's roster just became that much more stacked. I mean, I'm going to miss names, but I mean, imagine Tessa against Charlotte. Like, that's the obvious one with the Four Horsemen lineage. We got Becky, if Becky comes back, if and when Becky comes back. We got Sasha, we got Bayley, we got Asuka, we got Rhea Ripley, Io Shirai. I mean, there's so much talent that Tessa could be wrestling. So really, really interested to see where all that goes. I guess the coming weeks and months. Moving on, we got the National Wrestling Alliance. So they're going to be doing weekly pay-per-views, and they're doing them under the prime time. It's weekly primetime live pay-per-view series, and it's alongside United Wrestling Network. Now, I have searched far and wide, and I do not know what this full show for the first week is going to be. I cannot find like the match listings. I've seen some of the people that are going to be involved, such as Thunder Rosa, the women's champion, and Adrian Quest, Andy Brown, Ray Rosas will be a part of the show. But the main, Hammerstone will be there as well. But the main thing here is Mike Bennett is going to be wrestling Nick Aldis for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And this is really important for a lot of reasons. One being that Nick Aldis has been an incredible champion. In his two title reigns, he has just completely changed the perception of that title and really rejuvenated it, really revalued it. And he's been a long-term champion. Like, he lost the belt to Cody. He had been a long-term champ, lost the belt to... So if I remember correctly, he beat Tim Storm for the belt, held it for a while, lost to Cody at All In, and then won the title back from him at NWA 70, which I was there live in Nashville for that. And he has held the belt ever since then. And NWA 70, I'm going to look this up because I feel like it was a long time ago already. At least over a year, right? It was October 21st, 2018. Yeah, so 2 years ago already. So, I mean, this guy's title reign, it cannot be understated what he's done with that belt and for that brand. And Mike Bennett is in a, I would call it a desperate situation. I'm going to be dead honest. Like, he needs something to happen for him or else he's about to get lost in the shuffle again. Like, he was lost in the mix big time with WWE. And there's a lot of people that could be put, the blame could be put on for that. Like, when he came in, he was immediately put on the main roster without ever going to NXT. And a lot of it, I think, had to do with the fact that he's married to Maria Kanellis, who, you know, the fans knew because of her run in WWE before that and stuff. So, you know, he never even had the luxury of, like, going to NXT and, like, getting over with that crowd and, like, even having a chance to have some, like, really good matches. Because that's like, the knock I get from NXT, but it's, like, the positive I see in it also is, like, people get really discouraged when wrestlers get moved to Raw or SmackDown from NXT because they're, like, man, I don't know what they're going to look like on Raw or SmackDown with, like, Vince McMahon controlling their career and their destiny. But the way I look at it is, you know, anyone who goes to NXT, we have an opportunity to see potentially, like, a couple years of, like, that person's best work of their career. Like, we're going to get some really, really, really good stuff. If they move to Raw or SmackDown, it's going to be a total coin flip, and they probably won't be able to have these kind of matches anyways, regardless of how they get pushed. Maybe we'll see flashes of these kind of things again if they leave the WWE after they're signed and go back to the Indies or another company or AEW or something like that. But for that time, that moment in time, those few years that they potentially will be in NXT, the reason I say all this is because, like, Mike Bennett could have come in, could have went to NXT, and maybe he has, like, a year's worth of really good matches, like, really builds his name up. He's in the title mix. He maybe becomes the champion, whatever it is. Then by the time he shows up on Raw or SmackDown alongside his wife, then it's, like, a big deal, and they do something with that. The way that it happened, it was shot in the foot from the start. So he's in a spot now. So then I'll pull back even another layer, right? Like, when he was with the WWE, he reportedly, and I believe even him himself said publicly, like through Twitter and stuff, like he wanted out of his contract. He was not happy at WWE. And he was also going through a lot of personal stuff, addiction issues and stuff like that. And not only did I really don't know how else to say this. Like, he re-signed even though he was miserable, is what it seemed like. Like, the WWE came to him with an offer he couldn't refuse, similar to a lot of other wrestlers we've heard about, you know, over the last, you know, year. And he wound up re-signing. So, like, part of it's on him. Like, I get it. They gave you an offer you couldn't refuse, but it's like, if you were that miserable and you wanted out that bad and you want to really, really, you know, bet on yourself, maybe you shouldn't have signed that contract. And I really think that if you wouldn't have signed that contract, he probably would have been a part of AEW from the start of the company, and he'd be in a way better spot now than he is currently. Where he's at now, though, is it's where we are. I do not think that Mike Bennett is going to defeat Nick Aldis for this championship belt. I don't think that he should. I think this needs to be a really, really big deal when Aldis finally loses this belt, and it needs to be to somebody with a name value that's built much higher than where Mike Bennett is currently at. I get this is like a redemption thing for Bennett, and that he's going to be taking this match more seriously than probably any match he's ever had in his life. And I think he's going to bring it, and I think it's going to be really good. And I think there's going to be points in this match where I really believe that Mike Bennett's going to win. But at the end of the day, I think Nick Aldis has to retain the belt here, because there is going to be a perception with Mike Bennett for a little while. There just is. There's no other way to put it. He was a jobber in WWE. He was a jobber. He was literally cucked by his wife on WWE television. Like, it's something where this goes for literally most fans of wrestling. Most wrestling fans are not going to know about Mike Bennett's history, where, you know, his stuff with Adam Cole and Ring of Honor and all the stuff he did before WWE. Most people are going to know him as a WWE jobber who was cucked by his wife on national television, who couldn't do anything bigger than being a part of the herd running around for the NXT or running around for the 24/7 title. You can't have that guy just show up in the NWA World Heavyweight title match and then win the title, and then people just be like, oh, great for him. Like, no, you got to rebuild yourself. You got to go out there. I think Mike Bennett should have a great match with all this. I think Aldis retains. And then I think Bennett either sticks around with NWA or does stuff with them or Ring of Honor or wherever else he winds up and rebuilds himself. I think he is salvageable. But I don't think the right thing to do is to just strap that NWA title right to him right now. Now, the flip side of this also is this was supposed to be Marty Scurll and Nick Aldis next for the title. There's a lot going on with Marty Scurll at the moment. Don't know what his future is actually going to look like. And unless there's like some big rush to get the belt off Aldis for some reason, like if he's going to be going somewhere else or if they have these specific plans with him not as champion, I don't see any reason at all why you put that belt on Mike Bennett. So once again, I'm going to take Nick Aldis to retain the championship. All right, last up, we have a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled All Out Fallout. This is what happened. So it starts off with the Young Bucks fig hunting at Walmart. They're looking for their Jazzwares action figures still. One thing about this that bothers me, every time they show up at one of these stores and they don't see their toys there, they keep talking about how they're sold out. That is not the case, I promise you. What's happening is a lot of these Walmarts just straight up are not getting the figures. The Walmarts they're going to have probably never seen there has never been a Young Bucks figure on any of the pegs inside of the Walmarts they're going to. They occasionally come across a Cody or a Kenny, but even myself, I have yet to see Young Bucks out in the wild. I have yet to see Brandy out in the wild. And it's one of these things where, like, I'm sure there are some places who have gotten Young Bucks figures, but most of them probably haven't. And most of them probably haven't gotten any of the figures. And some of them might have gotten like a couple, and by sold out, it's like they sold like five of them because they only had five in stock. So it's frustrating because either the Young Bucks don't realize that there's been serious distribution problems with Walmart in their figures, or they're just kind of like kayfabing us because it's like they know that there's been distribution problems and they're just kind of trying to make it seem like they're selling out versus just not showing up. So wanted to throw that out there. As a figure collector myself, it's been incredibly frustrated with these. I wound up just ordering all of them online, but there are the Chase figures. There's a 1 of 500 Cody and a 1 of 1,000 Jericho that you could only get at Walmart. And I don't think any of those, I've seen some of the wrestlers who have them that have clearly been sent directly from Ringside Collectibles, but I have not seen, I mean, it's been, I have not seen any in the wild or on eBay or anything of those Walmart exclusives and stuff. So the whole rollout of those figures, gigantic disaster, and I hope the Young Bucks realize that. Like, they can keep showing up to Walmart every week on Being the Elite. They're probably never going to find their figures inside of Walmart, or at least for a while until Walmart figures all this out. Moving on the show, the Young Bucks and Jurassic Express are arguing backstage. The Jurassic Express is like giving the Young Bucks some crap because like they didn't even do like their flexing on their entrance or any of the theatrics and stuff like that. It seemed like they didn't really care. The Young Bucks were very heelish during this match. Matt tells Lucha that Luchasaurus that he could have hit the most basic move ever, and they consider the most basic move ever to be a Canadian Destroyer. They wind up talking about Helen Hart, and Luchasaurus is talking about how he was with Helen Hart at one point and calls her the OG of the Canadian Destroyer, which I thought that was really funny. Hangman Page is talking to Brandon Cutler. He says that he fucked up. He says that the Young Bucks and FTR are right. He calls himself a piece of shit. And he wants Cutler to talk to the Young Bucks for him. He's trying to figure all this out and keep his friendship with the Young Bucks. Silver and Reynolds are trying to recruit Wardlow to the Dark Order. They have their Kool-Aid. And they wind up just hitting on him the whole time. I mean, that's really all that happens. Like, they just go in there and just hit on him viciously. And Wardlow seems to kind of like the compliments and, like, says, okay, we'll talk later. He's kind of weirded out by it, but he's also like, all right, well, yeah, we'll talk later. And then Silver and Reynolds, like, realize that they forgot to actually ask Wardlow to join the Dark Order that whole time. Then we see the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler stealing t-shirts from Cracker Barrel because they're still not sponsored by them. Matt Jackson is wearing a girl's shirt because, like, you know, it was stolen and he just got whatever shirt he could. We then get a segment of speaking Spanglish. It's a Mi phone that they're talking about. Instead of an iPhone, a Mi phone. And it's basically a Latino / Latina, Hispanic, whatever you want to call it, type of version of an iPhone that, you know, if you want the chisme, the iPhone tells you, you know, about the chisme going on and that kind of stuff. After that, the Young Bucks are on a red carpet. This is prior to All Out. They're wearing tank tops and their COVID bracelets and that kind of stuff. They didn't even know there was going to be a red carpet, so they're just kind of, you know, just not dressed for the occasion. Then we get a Public Swole announcement. I think these are so bad every week. Just there's nothing entertaining about this to me whatsoever. The Spanglish. There's a few ongoing segments that they keep going back to that I just think are just a waste of time. The Public Swole announcements being one of those. Swole is sitting at a bar. She's basically talking about how ladies need to keep their legs crossed at the bar, especially if they're wearing dresses. She says that if you do that, you'll be sitting pretty. Ricky Starks hears the term sitting pretty, pops up from behind the bar, and then Swole says that, you know, he messed up her segment and walks away. Like I said, giant waste of time. Brody Lee walks into the Dark Order locker room, and he's looking for Colt Cabana because Colt cost him the match on pay-per-view. Evil Uno's on his phone. Brody asks what he's doing. Evil says that he is on Twitch. Brody says that Twitch is dead, says they can't use any more third parties, and it's basically a big knock on the WWE and what they've done recently by telling people they can't use Cameo and Twitch and that kind of stuff with the WWE likeness. They have to go by their own names and get everything approved, yada yada. So a big playoff of that. We then see something that I thought was just absolutely incredible. Sinbad, the actor Sinbad, is doing a cameo and joins the Dark Order on Cameo. Brody is really happy about this. He asks who got them Sinbad, and basically everyone's in agreement that, you know, it was mainly Silver who got him, but of course Brody Lee gives Reynolds all the credit, gives Reynolds a big high five. He's so happy they got Sinbad in the Dark Order. Brody then brings in Griff Garrison to the room and says, I present to you Jungle Fucking Boy. And Silver's like, yo, that's Griff Garrison. And as he says that, Anna Jay pops up from behind Griff and chokes him out, and the Dark Order cheers her on. And then Anna Jay leaves with Mr. Brody Lee. And the end of the episode, we see Brandon Cutler trying to talk to the Young Bucks about Hangman. They don't want to talk about it, and they basically say they just need to focus on themselves right now. And we get a whole montage of the Elite that ends showing a broken picture of the Elite sitting outside of Cracker Barrel from years ago. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. As always, make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at FightTalk_. That's FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.